From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 172 of Little Brother for the 29th of March, 2026. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may for whatever reason attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started! One of the trends that has bothered me in recent years has been that operating systems, especially commercial ones, have been requiring that you log into a centrally administered account of some kind. Sometimes that has benefits, but you should be able to say, "I don't want that," and have that be the end of the story. To that end, it appears as though Microsoft got the memo and are starting to remove the requirement for Windows 11 users to establish or log on to an online account in order to use Windows 11, with the obvious downside that you would not be able to use OneDrive, but with the equally obvious upside that your computer is now self-contained, which should always have been an option. Now, I kind of hate to use 4chan as a good example of, well, really anything, but I have to give them credit for the way that they handled a recent event. It seems as though the UK recently enacted laws requiring that websites available in the UK verify the age of their users, as I discussed two episodes ago. The way they have implemented it requires that the identity of the user is verified, and of course, 4chan is anonymous, so this is what they call a non-starter. In response, the UK issued a fine against 4chan of £520,000. 4chan's response was, quote, "As has been explained to your agency ad nauseum, the United Kingdom lost the Revolutionary War. We are not in the mood to discuss the matter further and have not been in the mood for 250 years, end quote. Yeah, that's gonna leave a mark. While we're on the topic of confusions about jurisdictions and their boundaries, we come to the fines that Italy has levied against Cloudflare. Cloudflare, for those unfamiliar, is one of many organizations that offers an alternative DNS service to that which is provided by your internet provider, and it's easily remembered as 1.1.1.1. Italy, it seems, would like for Cloudflare to block access to any pirate websites. They have issued a fine against Cloudflare for €14.2 million, in response to which Cloudflare have said,
"Screw you guys, I'm going home,"
and may opt to block their services from Italian users entirely. Google, who runs a similar DNS service at the also-easy-to-remember address of 8.8.8.8, are also being similarly targeted by the Italian government. I have talked a bit lately about age verification and how operating systems are being required to include it to one or another degree, which brings us to Graphene OS. Graphene OS is a privacy-oriented substitute for stock Android, and their response to age verification aligns very nicely with mine, which is, and I quote, "No." Graphene's response is, quote, GrapheneOS will remain usable by anyone around the world without requiring personal information, identification, or an account. If GrapheneOS devices can't be sold in a region due to their regulations, so be it, end quote. Good. Lobbying against these laws is needed, but open defiance needs to happen hand in hand with it to ensure that these laws become complete failures. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Here are the security alerts for this fortnight. If you're a Windows user, first off, why? Okay, never mind that question. I keep saying I won't platform shame, so you know what? Let me come in again. Here are the security alerts for this fortnight. If you are a Windows user, we have an alert for you this fortnight that's not so much a security alert as a bug alert. PC World is reporting that Samsung PCs are suffering from a storage failure after installing KB5077181 for Windows 11. According to Microsoft, the patch includes fixes for issues with full-screen gaming, some issues with WPA3 on personal Wi-Fi networks, and issues with secure boot. If I had to guess, it's probably the secure boot where the things are going south. The affected Samsung computers, after applying this patch, are not able to access the C drive, which, as you might be aware, is kind of important. Affected computers are Galaxy Book 4 laptops running Windows 11, 24H2, and 25H2. There are a number of specific models listed. However, out of an abundance of caution, I would say that if you have a Galaxy Book 4, you should assume you have the conditions for this situation to arise. There is a fix. It involves removing the Samsung Galaxy Connect app and then having Windows repair the drive permissions. It takes about 15 minutes, and I have included a link to the process in the program notes. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time? And we've got two this time. First up, we have Sweden's digital ID system. So, Sweden, it seems, has a centralized digital ID system called BankID. About 94% of smartphone owners in Sweden use it, and it's run by a consortium of Swedish banks, and hence the name. It is widely accepted to prove identity and can be used via a digital certificate, a card, or a mobile app. That's brilliant, but unfortunately, it is also a single point of failure. It is reported that a hacking group known as Byte to Breach has gotten a hold of the source code to the system and access to the core infrastructure. Now, if the system is well designed, then the source code is not a big deal. But the fact that it has been acquired proves that the infrastructure has indeed been breached, and that's concerning because the personal details of the Swedish public are now at their disposal. However, the big hack of this fortnight is far more concerning. What, you may ask, is more concerning than the entire population of a country being exposed? How about the director of the FBI? So, I'm not going to mince words here. We are a country at war. This is not an excursion or a police action. It is a war. Even though it is not a war in law, it is a war in fact, and saying otherwise is a distinction without a difference. Well, being at war, there's an enemy. And since cyber war is a thing, you can reasonably expect cyber war to be waged against us by our enemy, which is a thought that's been on my mind for some time now. And we have been struck. Again, actually. I mean, the hit on Stryker that I talked about last episode was sourced similarly, and when I say similarly, I mean the same group, Handala Hack. On Handala Hack's website, we find them boasting that the FBI director Kash Patel will, quote, find his name amongst the list of successfully hacked victims, end quote. He is now compromised, and he cannot be trusted. Now, I didn't trust him in the first place, but if there is anything personally compromising in what has been captured, he can now be manipulated, and that, dear listener, is really fucking scary. I almost don't know where to start with this one, so let's just start with what happened. It seems like the FCC has banned new foreign-made routers. All right, so the problem starts with a legitimate point, which is that home routers have legitimately been a vector for propagating malware. A vulnerable router by some manufacturer, say for instance TP-Link, gets easily pwned, and once pwned, starts running a process in the background that looks for other similarly vulnerable routers, and the infection spreads far and wide, which is how you build a botnet. And that is a legitimate concern. However, the way the FCC docs read, it seems more like the belief is that this is a deliberate hole, not plain negligence. Well, okay. So, the solution that they have implemented is to simply say, no more foreign-made routers. For the record, that's all of them. There are no American-made home routers. None. Oh, and also, any routers that are already on the market can continue to be sold, which kind of means we haven't really solved anything. And those existing routers? You're still able to download firmware upgrades for them, which means that the simplest attack vector, if one of these manufacturers wanted to insert a backdoor that isn't already there, is still wide fucking open. For now. In a year, that gets closed as well. So, what have we achieved here? Well, now we've got a short market. We've got no ability to advance the technology because nobody who is allowed to sell here makes it. The home network market is now frozen at 2026. Mind you, the hardcore nerds like yours truly will absolutely build our own, but that is not a good solution for most users. We can absolutely update the firmware on some existing routers to something that isn't stock, such as OpenWRT or DDWRT or similar. We can absolutely run router firmware on an x86 computer that made it to market because it isn't sold as a router. However, none of these are good solutions for your typical home user. The average user will instead be stuck using an old router. It will use old firmware, supposedly to make things more secure by preventing security updates. This is so fucking stupid. The FCC has tools at their disposal that could have fixed this. There is a process called type acceptance that is applied to any device that transmits radio waves. So why couldn't this just be applied to routers as well? Of course, it also goes without saying that those of us who live close enough to a border will just, you know, go to Canada or go to Mexico and buy what we actually want. I said it just two paragraphs ago, but I'll say it again. This is so fucking stupid. When you take the experts out of an agency and replace them with yes men, you get this kind of stupidity. I'm just going to refer back to the Heinlein quote that I used at the opening of the last episode, and I will leave it at that. The Albany Times Union is reporting that the city of Troy, New York, responding to public outcry, has shut off the national search feature of the city-owned Flock security cameras. Of course, the cameras themselves are still deployed and still recording license plate numbers. It's just that now the information is supposedly not shared with the national database operated by Flock. Obviously, I'm not sure whether or not the software can be trusted to do what they say it does when you do that, but that's another matter. The problem remains that the cameras remain. Even so, if they are not participating in Flock's nationwide aggregation, that's at least a step in the right direction because it takes a piece out of the national dragnet. You've all heard my opinions on VPNs before. If you haven't, go back and listen to episode 53. Yeah, I know that was 5 years ago, but I did almost an entire episode on the subject. Regardless of how I feel about them, some folks do use them to good effect. But now a number of congressmen are asking the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, to warn the American public that using a VPN may cause you to forfeit your rights against warrantless surveillance. I feel like this is the wrong message. You never forfeited that right. You're still an American, and you're still on American soil. What it does do, however, is increase the likelihood that your traffic might get swept up with a tranche of foreign traffic that the U.S. government seems to think it's entitled to snoop on. In my opinion, it's not. But it might get swept up in such a tranche of foreign traffic because it appears to have originated from a foreign source, assuming that you used a VPN server located outside of the U.S. Still, the warning is worth heeding. The government feels it's entitled to look at foreign data traffic, and using an out-of-country VPN makes your traffic foreign, both legally and in fact. The Intercept has published a guide on how to keep ICE from pawing through the contents of your phone when you are at an airport. This is probably especially relevant now that ICE agents are being sent to airports in large numbers in a misguided attempt to cover for the sorry state that TSA finds itself in without funding. The guide covers the usual things, you would hear from me just as much, such as, well, not carrying any device that you don't absolutely need to carry, disabling biometrics, powering the device off, deleting unneeded files, logging off. It's all solid advice, and the message echoes things that I and others have said on various occasions, but if you want to give it a read, I'll put a link to it in the program notes. Meta, which is the company that owns, for instance, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Oculus, is going to be shutting down support for end-to-end encrypted chat on Instagram. Okay, you heard that right. Well, I mean, first off, I didn't know that was an offering or a claim on their part, but I feel like using a Meta platform, or for that matter, any platform supported by ads, analytics, or both, really can't be trusted to maintain data privacy. They want the data for analytical purposes, and I would strongly suspect that they have access to the content of those messages by some means because it's valuable to them. The fact that they have possession of it in a form that's accessible to them means that even if they were to make a completely good faith effort to maintain data privacy, that data is legally discoverable. So, basically, what the fuck are you using Instagram for private communications for? Use Signal, for fuck's sake. It's non-profit. As usual, we'll end the show with a fail of the fortnight. We have a problem, which is that we have put all of the things into the cloud, even when those things do not warrant it. A breathalyzer is a simple device. It uses electrophysical means to determine whether or not you have been drinking. The devices first appeared in the 1970s. They were fully self-contained, and they were completely capable of carrying out the test in, of, and by themselves with no external connection to anything except the subject's breath. One of the tools available to address chronic driving under the influence, or driving while intoxicated, or whatever it's called in your jurisdiction, is an ignition interlock, where a breathalyzer is connected to the ignition of the subject's car, so that the car can't be started until after the driver has blown clean. And I want to emphasize, this is something that is meted out as a sentence. We can debate whether or not any person should ever have gotten to this point and whether or not this is a good solution, but not right now. I just want to focus on the tech for a second. Now, the thing is, the breathalyzer takes an analog measurement, and the interlock only needs to compare that value to a threshold and make a go or no-go decision about starting the engine. Did you know there's a very simple device that can do this? It's a little chip called a comparator. Two analog values go in, and a digital yes or no comes out the other side about whether or not input A is greater than input B. It's that fucking simple. You connect that to a relay, and you put the relay in line with the ignition switch. Problem solved. No outside resources required, no network, no cloud, no server, nothing. But we can't keep the simple task simple now, can we? No, of course we fucking can't. And so we find ourselves in a situation where some folks who have been on the receiving end of such interlocks found themselves locked out because their interlocks were not working. Why? Well, it seems like the server that these interlocks relied on, for reasons that elude me, got hacked. The company in question, Intoxilock, got pwned, and drivers who depend on the Intoxilock devices for their continued authorization to drive were needlessly stranded. Now, normally, I would have put a story like this into the Who Got Pwned portion of the show, but it seemed to me like the needless attachment of these devices to a cloud service without having the basic ability to make a local determination autonomously when the bigger system goes down is a significant failure. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Fongaboo, Alex Marthews, Thriller at Play, Den Zuko, Julie Bernstein, and Joe Cadillac for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 173 will drop on April 12th. Stay safe and be well.
He did the thing!